is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The experience of White Christmas, think about it. You've heard it a million times, maybe 2 million times. Bing Crosby, White Christmas. And we look forward to it each year. It tells us the calendar's going to change to a new year. However, that moment is revelatory of a new book's breakthrough for me, understanding of our minds and how they work in our environment. The book is The Experience Machine, How Our Minds Predict and Shape Reality. I welcome Professor Andy Clark, Professor of Cognitive Philosophy at the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom and several other distinguished universities. Andy's book is going to take us to White Christmas and explain very carefully how it is that we can hear White Christmas when it's not there or when it might be there or when it's unintelligible. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. The experience is White Christmas. The suggestion is, do you hear it or not hear it? What have you learned from the experiment that is conducted with a variety of young people who do know the song? What have you learned of the predictive brain? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. So the White Christmas experiments are kind of very interesting sort of set of experiments dating back actually to 1964, which kind of explains why they chose Bing Crosby's White Christmas as the sort of core song that they were going to use. But the main ones were conducted around 2001 because they were more controlled. They were better experiments. And these involved undergraduates who were ushered into a room, and they were told that they were going to be played a sound file, and that in that sound file there might be a very faint onset of Bing Crosby singing White Christmas, and their job was to touch a button when they heard the faint onset of White Christmas, if they heard it, because it wouldn't be in every sound file. And the upshot was that, in fact, about a third of the participants pressed the button at least once, reported good confidence in having heard the onset of Bing singing White Christmas, and it was checked beforehand that they knew what that would sound like. In fact, of course, it was all white noise. There was no White Christmas at all in any of these sound files. So the question raised is, what's going on? Why do people confidently report, some people confidently report, here in the onset of Bing, when in fact there is no Bing Crosby in there, it's white noise? The theory that I'm looking at in the book is a very, very detailed psychological and neuroscientific and computational model of effects like that. Effects where it looks like an expectation, a prediction was installed in the participants by the experimenter in their, you know, white coat, confident sounding person saying, you know, there will be a hidden onset of Bing Crosby somewhere in these sound files. That made them up the strength on their expectation. And it turns out that strong expectations play such a role in perception that the right thing to think is that perception itself is kind of structured from the inside out. The brain is predicting the outside signal, and the stronger that prediction, the more likely we are to hallucinate that outside signal. Most of the time, there's a delicate dance there that we will talk about where, with a certain give and take, we get things right. But that's the general picture of the White Christmas experiments, just a demonstration of the power of prediction to impact what you seem to be experiencing in the world.
There is a physiological fact established about the flow of the brain and in the flow of senses coming into the brain and the flow of the brain reacting to its environment or its stimulation. And as I understand it, in any particular event, there can be four times the amount of information coming from the brain as coming in from the outside. What does that tell us, Andy?
Yes, that's right. I mean, these numbers vary a little bit from brain area to brain area, but in general, downward flowing information, it outnumbers inflowing information, meaning that what the brain is kind of pushing out towards the world actually seems to be greater in quantity than what it's taking in from the world. This, of course, is very interesting if you have a certain model of perception that goes back all the way to Descartes, where perception was all about basically things hitting the sense organs and moving deeper and deeper into the brain, getting more and more refined. If these stories are right, and I now think there's not much doubt that they're right, then what's going on actually is the brain is predicting what's going on at the sense organs. And then all it has to do in order to tune in on the world, if you like, is take account of the errors that then emerge in the prediction. So it's a very much a different picture. You start with a prediction, and then the world just gives you feedback on the prediction, as opposed to taking stuff in from the world and then trying to make the predictions or render the experiences, as you might say.
Let's put it into motion, because that's a big part of our experience to correct. An example, we've talked about this. In the morning, well before dawn, my dog Sailor and I go out to a landscape that is all wooded, and now and again there are white-tailed deer on the horizon. And when I go out in the morning, there's not enough light to be certain whether I'm seeing them or not seeing them. I don't trust entirely my perception until they move. What I'm doing is I'm remembering that landscape. I'm not perceiving the landscape. I'm looking for differences in it from my expectation and the fact of it. I also check on Sailor, because his sense of smell is 100 or 1,000 times what ours is. And if he's responding in the same direction, I have affirmation. If he's not, I have what you'd have to say is cognitive dissonance, and I check myself. How do I check myself? I move toward it. Now, what am I describing, Professor?
Yes, I think there's a lot of things going on in Predictionville there, if you like. Some of it is you come to the scene with a set of expectations about what's likely to be out there. I think white deer seem to figure in those expectations. And these aren't even necessarily being consciously rehearsed. I don't think you're going out there thinking, no, oh, I'm looking for white deer. But they're sort of installed there. They're the background to your walk into that landscape. What that means is that you, at that point, are a very sensitive, in one way, white deer detector. You're kind of poised for white deer, but at the same time, perhaps because your visual acuity is not as good as someone that was standing a bit closer or something, you're likely to get a lot of false positives. In a way, that's what the White Christmas experiment is. It's a kind of false positive for White Christmas. It's like I've got a strong expectation of Bing Crosby coming in sometime, and I start to hear it a bit like, also, we can see faces in the clouds. If you sort of start to expect to see a face, you look up there, you can probably kind of find a face form. So I think that's part of it. You're kind of framed already by those expectations. But as you say, you know, we're not hostage to those entirely, because we can check our own predictions by acting in the world to see what happens. You can move around for a better kind of line of sight, or you can actually treat Sailor, your dog, as a kind of sensitive detector, and you can assign high weighting to what Sailor thinks and allow that to kind of overwhelm what you would otherwise say is out there. So it's actually quite an interesting case for me, because it brings together various things, one of which is sort of augmenting ourselves by different devices, in this case, Sailor, and the other is the big role of prediction in structuring experience in ways that are then tested by action, keeping us kind of honest, where possible, sort of making sure that we don't just hallucinate our worlds, that we really stay in touch with them.
What your book teaches me, of course, that my mind includes Sailor, includes my iPhone that tells me how long it is to sunrise, includes the fact that I have a bout of Lyme disease, which is from the deer tick, which is from the white-tailed deer. All of that is part of my perception, what's new and what's old. Have I read you correctly, Professor?
Yeah, you have. One of the upshots of this this account is that what we perceive in the here and now is kind of deeply rooted in our own past experiences, and it also reaches into the future, because we kind of have predictions about what will happen if we act in the world in certain ways. You kind of predict that you'll get a better set of information if you move your head in certain ways or move closer. So prediction sort of, although perception happens in the present, the contents of perception seem to be really structured by the past and the future.
I'm speaking with Professor Andy Clark. The new book I highly recommend, The Experience Machine, How Our Minds Predict and Shape Reality. When we come back, how we can overweight what we think we're perceiving. autism, PTSD, and depression. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.